The subject for today is the call to action. And last week, when Rihanna sent me a message asking for the title of my talk, I had no idea. The fact that she was asking me represented to me a humiliating look into an empty shelf of ideas. But I recognized that her message or request to me was actually a gift, a call to action. So I responded by naming the talk in this way. And commercially, a call to action is that part of an advertising message which provokes you to buy the thing. So I'm trusting that you've already bought the thing because you've moved your feet to come here today. So my reflection on this call to action has to do with considering the difference between action and inaction and what lies between. And when I named the talk, immediately ideas began to fill the previously empty shelf. And I went to my bookshelf and got a whole pile of books. And then I opened a book about Buddhism and read the Buddhist morning prayer, in which the Buddhist asks to benefit all sentient beings. And I immediately felt nourished and a sense of joy and gratitude that I might be included in the morning prayer of someone else, a Buddhist, any Buddhist. And in our readings, the African tradition presented this proverb: when you pray, move your feet. And it's like that old joke about the man who complained to God that despite all his prayers, God had not helped him to win the lotto. To which God replied, "In order to win, you have to buy a ticket." I'm acknowledging the two parts of action, the inner work of acknowledging the call to prayer, the act of contemplation and celebration. When we pray, we're naming and worshiping God and celebrating all the qualities of God. So it's that, there's that inactivity of the mind to prepare the spirit and to prepare the body for right action based on compassion, kindness, grace, wisdom, and love or respect for the other. And then there is the outer will or action by the body. And I want to give three examples from my own life about our call to action, which I recently experienced and had to respond to. The first example is that I decided to sell my home. And all the signs indicated to me that it was now time to do that and move to a place with a smaller garden, no trees to crash in a storm, no expensive roof to repair, or aging walls needing cosmetic surgery. Those things were the call to action. But the contemplation of losing the garden and the window to the east for morning prayer, and the act of letting go of the space where my children grew up, that was hard to do. So I hummed and hawed and stalled on cleaning up my mountain of papers, and finally, after thinking it through and working through the grief of letting it go, I could commit to the action. And sign the document to put the house on the market. And that was a difficult inner journey to reach the outer commitment of action. The second example has to do with an argument with my neighbors. So this call to action was a long-standing difficulty with my neighbor about our shared driveway between our two old houses. And despite my best effort at cooperation and calm communication, my neighbor and his wife one day became extremely agitated and were verbally very abusive to me in the driveway. I stayed calm on that day, but wrote up two statements intending to confront my neighbors at the domestic violence court. However, the act of getting the statement signed and stamped was very gratifying to me, and I decided I would not act upon this initiative against them. I would not go through with it. So I did not heed my own logical and emotional call to action. And there is also this issue that in one of these readings is mentioned, the courage to seek justice. So maybe I was lacking that courage, but I decided not to proceed. And it meant that I had to withdraw my emotional energy from the issue and seek a sense of peace. And this is in line with the Buddhist morning prayer, which says, "Everything in this world arises and extinguishes according to the law of dependent origination," meaning our connection to spirit. And what helped me not to act was the sense of being secure and protected by God even when I was being threatened. I felt safe inside despite trembling and feeling shocked. A part of me felt calm, timeless, irrefutably okay, and knowing I'd done no wrong. I had no need to shout at them or to enter their argument and hysteria. So this is an example of non-action, which actually nourished me because I turned away from the conflict and found I had no further need to retaliate or justify myself. So in this case, the call to action seemed to come from a legalistic point of view, which in the end had no strong hold upon me. Instead, I experienced a call to ahimsa, which is the Indian term for love, care, and peace. And now let's consider the third example, which is all about Amber, who is my niece. In this story, my niece and her two boy children, one of three and one not yet a year old, are hiding safely in their apartment in Dubai, while a nearby country, Iran, is firing missiles at their city. My niece Amber's husband, Miguel, who works for the airline, was until Friday stranded in Johannesburg because all flights to Dubai had been suspended. My anxiety about this young mother and her vulnerable children led me to contact my brother, her dad, and to ask him for news of her in a very neutral way. I felt I must voice a call to action and say clearly to my brother that she should, of course, find another way to travel home to South Africa. She should not obediently shelter in place and wait to be killed. She should escape from the city by bus, travel to Saudi Arabia, and catch a flight home to South Africa. My anxiety is so intense, as if Amber were my own daughter, partly because she looks so much like my late father, and partly because her little children are the closest thing I have to grandchildren. And this longing to save them from the war made me want to be bossy and emotional with my brother. But I managed to say, of course, Amber must decide what she wants to do. And this is the formula which I was able to utter. In the meantime, this abstaining from voicing a call to action through my brother to Amber was like chewing on cardboard, and it seemed counterproductive and counterintuitive not to beg and plead with her to come home immediately and shout at her to run, which is, of course, our old animal brain, which in a state of fear has this immediate response in our bodies, this impulse to run. But the call to action must be heard and responded to by Amber herself. Her own and her family's call to action will be generated by the seeds of contemplation, trust in God and the universe, and considering the best way to keep their children safe now that she's united with her husband. Yesterday. So in this third example of a call to action, I experienced a flow of love and protectiveness towards my niece, which was a call to action for me to add my opinion to motivate for them to leave. But the moment I recognized that my only action could be to show love, support, and encouragement to her to make her own decision, I was able to let go. It remains her decision and her husband's decision. So the call to action was, in fact, a call I experienced as a call to love. And now I want to reconsider the texts that you heard earlier. In the Hindu text, it mentions our attraction to modes of nature like anger, lust, and greed. And I've also added fear, our animal brain that orders us to run, as in the third example. The Buddhist text speaks about faith, devotion, and mindfulness, truthfulness, and tenderness, which is a word we don't often hear in the texts. And finally, energy to carry out our commitment. The African texts ask us to have not only strength to move our feet, but also wisdom, courage, and faith. The Hebrew scriptures ask us to stay aware of mercy and truth, grace, and good understanding. The Christian scriptures talk about sacrifices of joy which lead me in a plain path. And this idea of this plain path where things are so self-evident that the rush of feeling and the complexity of the situation and the different considerations melt away, and I'm praying for the result to be a plain path. In the scriptures of Islam, we heard, what actions are most excellent? To gladden the heart of a human being, feed the hungry, help the afflicted, and be kind to the bad, like example 2, where I tried not to take punitive action against my neighbors. And finally, the Sufi teachings say, may the light of God clear away the mists of illusion, and thy limitless love, thy everlasting life, thy heavenly joy, and thy perfect peace be ours.